First, we take a look at the week in Washington. A House committee is suing the IRS and Treasury Department to obtain President Trump's tax returns. There's been more congressional reaction to poor conditions at migrant detention facilities near the southern border. And the president is planning a new 4th of July celebration for the nation's capital, one that'll feature tanks, fighter jets, and military bands. Our question for you this week, what do you think of this expanded 4th of July festivities with the president participating? Is it a good idea? Do you have concerns about the cost or the possible partisan nature of the celebration? Or do you think it sends a good message? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Adrian Morrow is a U.S. correspondent for the Canadian paper The Globe and Mail. Adrian, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me again.
The House Ways and Means Committee, Adrian, sued the heads of the Treasury Department and the IRS this week. They're trying to get President Trump's tax returns after a subpoena earlier. What is the committee saying about its right to see those returns from the president?
It basically says that, you know, the committee has the right to look at these as part of its sort of a broader investigation. And the kind of narrow, you know, I mean, obviously the reason they're looking into this is because they think that there might be some, you know, some matter of public interest in the tax returns themselves. But I think that the sort of legal rationale that they're using is that it's germane to an investigation of kind of how, how the tax system is handled and how these sorts of things sort of, you know, work administratively. And so essentially arguing that, you know, they're doing their sort of proper exercising Congress's kind of proper oversight function, you know, by looking at these documents and kind of, you know, making sure that the IRS and Treasury Department are kind of, you know, properly handling taxes.
And they're citing rules and regulations that allow this particular committee to look at any American citizen's tax returns. It doesn't cite exceptions in that rule. What is the argument from the White House and the Treasury Department about why they're not providing that?
Yeah, I mean, they essentially say that they don't have to, you know, that this isn't sort of, you know, necessary for the committee to do its job. And that, you know, essentially saying if the committee just wants to sort of look at policy issues around taxes or sort of how taxes are being handled, you know, they don't need the president's tax returns, you know, specifically to do that.
But Congress, at least House Democrats, I should say, are citing Congress's oversight role, right, of the executive branch. They're saying this is part of their job. Is that their counterargument?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, they're basically arguing that they have Congress has the right to exercise oversight on, you know, on the executive branch, whether it's the president or, you know, the Treasury Department or the IRS, and that this is sort of just part of that, that they should be able to get the document.
Now, turning to the U.S. Census, Adrian, last week the U.S. Supreme Court rejected the Trump administration's reasoning for adding a citizenship question to the 2020 census. They didn't shoot it down completely, though. But now we're hearing some different things from the administration. I think we have the Justice Department and Commerce Department, right, saying, nope, the question is off. But the president tweeting, hold on, it's not. What are we hearing from all parties at the White House?
Yeah, I mean, this is just the usual sort of disorganization of the Trump administration, where, you know, his administration is kind of, you know, running things the way that a normal administration would, right? Where they, you know, they said they want to put this question on the census. You know, the Supreme Court has ruled against them, and so they basically made a decision within the Commerce Department that, you know, there's no way that they could realistically, you know, fight this or sort of try to get this, you know, approved for the census, you know, or sort of win a court battle over it in time for them to actually print the census questionnaire. And so Commerce has sort of made the, you know, the fairly pragmatic decision that, okay, you know what, we won't put this on the 2020 census because it's just not practical to try to get that, you know, get all the sort of legal restrictions sorted out before then. You know, so they said that yesterday, but then the president came out and said, you know, completely contradicted them and said, no, actually, that question will be on the census. But I mean, he hasn't cited sort of any real sort of way that could happen, you know, because he hasn't explained, you know, exactly sort of how they would sort out all the kind of legal complications before that, you know, especially given that his own government is saying, you know, that they won't have time to kind of work through the legalities, you know, before they have to print the census. You know, I suppose there's maybe theoretically some way that they could try to get the, you know, if they get the legality sorted out in their favor, they could maybe try to include it on a digital version of the census, but not on the paper version. But that seems, you know, to me, that seems very, that seems like that'd be a very dodgy thing to do, because, you know, you generally want to have the same questionnaire, whether it's digital or in hard copy, to make sure that your results are consistent sort of across the entire census. So, you know, I mean, my guess would be at some point the president, you know, probably will have to sort of give this up or just forget about it, because, you know, at the end of the day, the Commerce Department is probably correct that they just don't have the time, even if they did, you know, even if they did sort of go back to the Supreme Court and win this one, they wouldn't have the time to do that before they have to actually print the census questionnaires.
It's the Week in Washington. Adrian Morrow is with us from the Globe and Mail. We're looking at some of the top stories in national politics. We'll have more on that census issue tomorrow on the show after 4. The census, the issue of citizenship, and what recourse, if any, the president has with the deadline ticking, the clock ticking. That's tomorrow after 4. Adrian, this week we've seen Democratic lawmakers talking a lot this week about conditions at migrant detention facilities near the U.S.-Mexico border. We talked about their visit some on the show yesterday. What reactions in Congress are catching your eye right now?
I mean, I think just the way that the Congress has kind of highlighted, sort of how bad the detention conditions are, and the fact that however you feel about sort of President Trump's argument on immigration one way or the other, whether you feel that, yes, all these people sort of crossing the border, need to be kind of immediately detained and should be held in custody until they're, until they can have a hearing, or whether you feel that the people should be sort of allowed to go out and work, whether it's in the U.S. or Mexico, while their claims are being adjudicated. However you sort of feel about the overall policy argument, the conditions of the detention centers that the Congress kind of highlighted, and that, the sort of internal government report that came out late yesterday, I think sort of confirmed, is that the conditions there are just are just sort of inhumane in a developed country. People sort of crammed in these relatively small areas, sort of having to stand up for long periods of time. People sort of not being either not getting sort of food or water at the right the right amounts of time. It really sort of looks it looks really bad on the administration, just sort of the fact that basically the upshot of Trump's Trump's policy in sort of encouraging more detentions. But the fact that that the U.S. government hasn't sort of adequately funded the detention centers to actually hold all these people, it's really it's really kind of, you're really seeing it in a very visceral way.
Congress passed this little over $4.5 billion bill of aid last week. Some of that is supposed to go to these facilities. What do we know about what of that money is going to go to address these particular issues you just talked about?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of been the Democrats, I think, imperative in Congress is attempting to to at least sort of properly resource the border so that there's so that there is sort of more more sort of money for these facilities. But you had a situation about a year ago where they were talking about sort of opening up military bases to house people. So I think that kind of gives you an idea of the scale of the issue. And it's possible that the money they're allocating is going to expand the detention facilities enough that it will be able to sort of absorb the number of people that the administration wants. But I think if Trump sort of had his way, I think they'd be detaining even more people at the border and sort of letting fewer people go. I think it's sort of an open question at this point whether even the new money that they have allocated is going to be enough to expand the detention facilities, to the extent that would be necessary.
Let's turn now, Adrian, to this July 4th event tomorrow. President Trump planning what he's calling a salute to America in D.C. Here's a listen to the president talking about what to expect.
We're going to have a great 4th of July in Washington, D.C. It'll be like no other. It'll be special. And I hope a lot of people come. And it's going to be about this country. And it's a salute to America. And I'm going to be here and I'm going to say a few words. And we're going to have planes going overhead, the best fighter jets in the world and other planes, too. And we're going to have some tanks stationed outside.
How does this compare to the usual Washington, D.C. July 4th celebration, Adrian?
Yeah, so it's sort of unusual in a couple of ways. I mean, number one is that typically the president doesn't actually sort of host the 4th of July celebrations in Washington. And I think sort of the reason for that is there's this idea that it shouldn't, there shouldn't be sort of the possibility of partisan politics kind of, impeding the celebrations. And so typically the president doesn't get directly involved in the big celebration on the Mall. And then the second aspect is actually the military element where, there have been, military parades in Washington in the past. But typically it's not sort of part of the Independence Day celebration. Like, typically the Independence Day on the Mall is generally this very sort of apolitical event with fireworks, a concert, some picnicking and that sort of thing. And it's relatively, relatively apolitical and sort of relatively sedate. So it's a little bit unusual for Trump for a sitting president to basically say that, he's going to sort of take ownership of the celebrations and give a speech. And it's also unusual for him to say we're going to sort of, use some military hardware, as part of our Independence Day celebration.
We're inviting our callers to weigh in on this July 4th celebration at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on Matt now calling in Madison. Matt, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. First of all, the concern is Donald Trump hijacking the event to turn it into a partisan event. But moreover, I think what's most disconcerting is Donald Trump has bypassed Congress with executive orders. He's befriended autocrats and dictators the world over. And he's also hinted at eliminating term limits for the president. He's mentioned that probably four or five times. And so it's all very disconcerting because it smacks of an autocrat.
Matt, thanks a lot for the call. Adrian, he's raising two different concerns there that people have brought up. We'll get to the visuals and what that means. But first of all, the idea of it being politicized, I think some Democrats saying, hey, the Republican National Committee is handing out some of the best seats at this thing. What have we heard on that front, Adrian?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the, you know, the main sort of concern on the politicization front at this point, too, is that he's decided there's going to be a VIP area sort of in front of where he gives a speech in front of the Lincoln Memorial. And so, you know, and so it does seem a bit, and the fact that, yeah, that they've had the Republican National Committee has been allocating some of the seats, and that sort of supporters of Donald Trump will get sort of better seating at the event. That's what, you know, in and of itself kind of looks like politicization. And I think there's also a question sort of what Trump is going to say, because it is entirely possible he might go up tomorrow and sort of give a very, kind of benign speech about American patriotism and how important America is in the world. But there's also the possibility that Trump being Trump, he'll go up and deliver a broadside against his political opponents. So I think there's, I think there's a lot of sort of possibility for this to become, very politicized. And on the optics front, I think it's sort of interesting because, Trump's sort of inspiration for doing this, for bringing in the military, actually comes from France. And, you know, he went to a Bastille Day celebration a couple of summers ago, and I guess was deeply impressed by the way that the French, it is true that the French do have a massive military component in their Bastille Day celebrations. They have, tanks in the streets, cuirassiers, guys in these sort of old, Napoleonic, cavalry outfits that are riding down the Champs-Élysées. And so that apparently impressed Trump, and that's kind of what he's patterning the Independence Day celebrations on. But the problem is that most people are probably not going to be familiar with that. And I think most people, when they see tanks in the streets or they see, a military component to your National Day celebrations, probably immediately think of autocracies, and particularly the former Soviet Union. That was sort of always a big component of Red Square, on the 1st of October. And so I think that's sort of the real sort of optical danger that Trump kind of runs into, is that a lot of people kind of see him flanked by tanks giving a speech on Independence Day and immediately sort of think of autocratic governments.
We continue our conversation with Adrian Morrow, U.S. correspondent for The Globe and Mail, talking about this week's news in national politics. Invited your calls on this celebration planned by the president in Washington, D.C. for tomorrow, Independence Day. Your thoughts on it at 800-642-1234. We'll go back to your calls now. Deb is with us in Milwaukee. Deb, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I agree with everything that your third caller said, all of his concerns. But another concern, and I'm also afraid to answer this, but does anyone know how much the strait is costing?
Deb, thanks for the call. Concerns have been raised, Adrian, about the cost of the festivities. What do we know?
Yeah, so far everyone has actually been sort of sketchy and hasn't quite sort of won't disclose exactly how much the festivities are going to cost. I've asked the Park Service today, and they refuse to say. But what we do know is that it typically costs about $2 million to do the festivities on the mall, and there has been some sources have told various reporters that it could be sort of $2 million more on top of that, or even more than that. That is going to have to be diverted to pay for it. So some of that might come from the National Park Service, which typically runs these sorts of events. But a lot of the costs will actually just be from the military and having to transport a bunch of their gear and fly a bunch of the planes up to D.C. As well as sort of pay their staff to be there. So so it's not entirely clear how much more it's going to cost. It's very likely to be within the millions of dollars. Flying all those fighter jets alone costs quite a lot of money when you think of the amount of the sort of fuel expenses that sort of go into it. So it is going to cost, definitely going to cost more money for the, either the military or the Park Service to stage this.
Deb, thanks for the call. We'll go to Adam now in Soldiers Grove. Adam, hi.
Hi. My biggest concern, and actually this goes on with her, where it comes down to the Democrats are now complaining about the cost, but they have no issue spending, millions of dollars on, the Russian issue, and now they're spending millions of dollars on taking care or trying to get his taxes. That I don't understand that. Why can he spend money on that, but not on the patronage and being a patriot? I don't understand that.
Adam, thanks for the call. And that's the argument. Maybe it's worth spending some money to honor the military and American history, Adrian.
Yeah, I was talking to Trump supporters down on the mall today. We were sort of watching them wheeling the tanks in by the Lincoln Memorial, and a bunch of them said, you have to show America's adversaries that we've got lots of military hardware if you want them not to mess with us. So, you know, there's certainly a large constituency for what Trump is doing. I think there are a lot of people who, you know, I think are fine with them spending the money to, you know, to sort of show off, you know, America's military hardware and, you know, kind of send this message, you know, don't mess with us, I guess. So, yeah, certainly. I mean, people who support Trump, I think, you know, are, at least the ones I've spoken to, are certainly supportive of him, doing this event, spending the money and adding a military component to it.
And Adrian, you've been out talking to people, I understand, in weather that's knocking on the door of 100 degrees. Do you know what the weather's supposed to be like for the actual event tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, tomorrow is supposed to be a little bit like today, so it'll probably be blazingly hot and humid, you know, during most of the day tomorrow. But there is a call for thunder showers in the forecast tomorrow evening, so it's possible that by the time, you know, the actual program gets underway and Trump gets up to speak, that the city might be drenched. So I think everybody tomorrow is sort of hoping that that's not the case and that the weather changes. But at the moment, the forecast actually doesn't look so good. It could very well be, you know, could very well be the event gets you know, fully or partially rained out.
Talking to Adrian Morrow from the Globe and Mail, looking at some of the top stories in the week in Washington. I want to move on to something you've been reporting on. Adrian, President Trump told Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau that he would talk with Chinese President Xi Jinping about Canadian detainees, two of them. Give us the backstory there, please.
Yeah, so back in December, Canadian authorities arrested Meng Wanzhou, who's the CFO of Huawei, which is a big Chinese telecommunications and mobile phone company. And they arrested her on behalf of the FBI, because the FBI has basically been building a case for years that Ms. Wanzhou tried to orchestrate a bunch of actions that would have broken U.S. sanctions on Iran. And so so the FBI had this warrant out for her. They basically referred it to the Canadians, and the Canadians arrested her in Vancouver when she was there changing planes for a flight. So subsequent to that, China basically detained these two Canadians. One is a former diplomat and one's an entrepreneur. And they basically held them on these what would appear to be trumped up charges of, claiming that these guys were, might have been engaging in espionage or that sort of thing. But very clearly seems to just be, you know, revenge on China's part for Canada, serving this U.S. arrest warrant on Meng Wanzhou. And on top of that, you know, what China's also done is they've imposed some trade sanctions on Canada, on Canadian beef and pork and canola and some other, some other agricultural commodities to try to sort of put some economic pressure on Canada as well. And so, you know, what happened a couple of weeks ago when Justin Trudeau was in Washington, he's basically been telling, you know, and the Canadians have been telling the Americans this for quite a long time. And I think Trudeau, you know, said this to Trump at his meeting. He said, you know, we did this for you. We stood by our extradition treaty and arrested, you know, somebody on behalf of the FBI. Now our people are basically getting hurt over it. So, you know, can you help us? You know, can you sort of, you know, basically have our back like we had yours? And when you see Xi Jinping at the G20 in Osaka, raise this with him and basically tell him that he has to, you know, let these guys go and stop, stop imprisoning Canadians as punishment. And so, you know, Trump actually made a commitment, on camera, in a scrum with reporters in the Oval Office, where he said, yes, you know, if Justin Trudeau wants me to go, you know, raise this issue with Xi Jinping, you know, I will do that. And I think he said something like anything I can do to help Canada, I will do. And so there have been some questions this weekend, you know, over at the summit, you know, whether Trump actually did that, because, you know, Trump wasn't asked about it in his news conference. Trudeau was asked about it, but Trudeau basically said, you know, I assume that he did, but you have to ask him. And so for several days, you know, nobody would say, and I asked the White House, you know, earlier this week, you know, did that happen? Did Trump sort of stick true to his word? And nobody would tell me on either side. Just within the last hour or so, I've had a couple of sources on the Canadian side who said that they've heard from the Americans that, yes, Trump did, in fact, you know, raise the issue of the detained Canadians with Xi Jinping. The Americans apparently said that he raised it forcefully, quote unquote. But it's not clear at this point sort of what that means, whether he actually laid out any sort of, consequences for Xi Jinping if he doesn't release the Canadians, or whether he just sort of mentioned it in passing. But what we do know is that the Trump, you know, did sort of, you know, keep his promise to Trudeau and apparently did raise, according to the Americans, did raise this issue directly with the Chinese president.
And finally and briefly, Adrian, Ivanka Trump, the president's daughter, got a lot of attention for playing a noticeable role at this big G20 summit in prominent places and prominent meetings. What do we know about her role there?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really clear that she was, you know, doing a whole lot that was substantive, but she, would sit in for high rank, you know, in place of high ranking U.S. diplomats in meetings of the G20. There was a video that was tweeted by the president of France's office that showed her, you know, sort of trying to get into a conversation with the president of France and Justin Trudeau and the head of the IMF. And we know that her and Jared Kushner followed Trump into his meeting with Kim Jong-un, the North Korean dictator, at the demilitarized zone, and apparently actually met Kim Jong-un sort of alongside, Donald Trump. So he's certainly been, Trump has really made a point of kind of bringing, Ivanka, who, is pretty much his favorite, is, you know, generally believed to be his favorite child, has made a point of kind of having her kind of sit with him and engage in these meetings. But it's not clear if she's actually done anything substantive or if this is more sort of just, I guess her sort of, playing host or kind of job shadowing her father.
And just briefly, what kind of reaction has that gotten?
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't gotten very positive reaction. I mean, the idea that basically a president has sort of had his child kind of come and take part in these kind of meetings when it's not clear that there's any sort of any reason for her to be there, hasn't sort of gone over very well. And it does sort of seem to play into the notion, though, that Trump has kind of given large, hefty portfolios to people in his family. Ivanka's husband, Jared Kushner, for instance, is sort of in charge of Trump's Mideast peace plan. And it's not really clear that somebody like him, a financier, really has the sort of skill set, necessary to untangle this thing. So this sort of looks like just another kind of another chapter in the, sort of Trump, helping out his family when there might be more qualified people for the job file.
Adrian, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Adrian Morrow, U.S. correspondent with The Globe and Mail. He was with us for a weekly look at the top news in national politics, joined us from the steamy streets of Washington, D.C. today, where he's getting reaction to this planned 4th of July celebration tomorrow. You can still let us know your thoughts on that. Email ideas@WPR.org or send us a quick note in Twitter form. You can always tweet us. We are @CentralTimeWPR. That's @CentralTimeWPR.